Can corporations ever lead to a sustainable world? Now you'll hear the inside scoop from a woman who has been there and back, Anita Burke. This keynote speech is from October 21st at the 2009 Gaining Ground Summit in Vancouver, British Columbia. The meeting theme was Resilient Cities, Urban Strategies for Transition Times. Anita Burke moved the audience with her presentation, Shifting Corporate Culture. She is introduced by conference moderator Ron Abbott.
And now I think you need to strap in, because my friend Anita Burke is probably going to, in many respects, in many elegant respects, riff off of Nola Kate, certainly Bill, most everyone else who's already been into the podium, as well as some people that haven't. Anita has lived in the belly of the beast for many years. She was inside Shell International, trying mightily to shift the trajectory of that organization. For some time now, she has been outside of Shell, trying to shift the trajectory of businesses, communities, and other organizations. She brings an authenticity and an energy that is breathtaking. Please join me in welcoming Anita Burke.
I'm sorry, I feel so odd. I mean, look at me. I'm all wired up. I got all this technology. Wow. I guess I should get the best out of it while we can still use it, according to what Bill said. Does anybody else want to go have a drink? I'm willing to give up my 15 minutes if you just want to go get drunk. And I don't drink, so I'm kind of like, wow, what am I going to do? I don't even have any intoxicants left to get me through this. I'm just really grateful to be here. And Vancouver is my adopted second home. And I'm just so grateful to be home again and to be back here amongst my Canadian friends. I'm currently living in Boulder, helping my son get through college. They grow up a lot slower these days. Has anybody noticed that? I have, yeah. It's like, God, you're 24. Are you done yet? Come on. It's a real delight to be here. And I think Gene's gotten enough thank yous. And what I want to thank everybody in the room here. And I want to thank everybody in the room here, not for what you've done, but for what I hope you will do in response to some of the things that Bill has shared with you and some of the things that I'll share with you today. Because Gene is serving to catalyze you here in this room, because you are what is going to change what is happening on our planet. Much like Dr. Reese, I was a little stymied by the topic I was given, change corporate culture. And I went, oh, well, I'm really in trouble because I don't believe we can do that anymore. And I woke up at 5 o'clock this morning just, what am I going to say? How am I going to do this? I have to tell them the truth. I lived in the belly of the beast. I know what's going on there. And God bless them. They're trying really hard. And it's not enough, fast enough. And the architectures that are in there, and I'm all confused and everything else. And then I stopped and I said, wait a minute. It's not them. We are the corporate culture. We are the corporate culture, and we must own that. We must own it in a deep and humiliating way. Because I got to tell you the truth. Shell International and Best Buy and Sony and all these companies, you know, they don't just sit around making this stuff because it's like cool and they want to trash the planet. I mean, honestly, there's a lot of people who like to say, jerks. It's not true. They only make these things because guess what? Every single one of you in this room buys them. Full stop. You buy them because you have been intoxicated by advertising and by this construct that you're only valuable as a human being and when you have a bunch of money in the bank and when you are rich. And when you have a big house, and when you have a whole lot of cars, that is currently what we believe it means to be a human being that is valued. And so when I was asked, what does it mean to change the corporate culture, I had to turn that around. And I had to bring into this room the construct and the reality that we are a corporate culture. Let's see, I need to get this started. Thanks. And yeah, I know. Isn't she beautiful? That's my point. I usually don't use a lot of notes, and bear with me with the computer up here. I just want to point out I didn't print out my notes on purpose, and this is a prop for me. And stop printing stuff out, gang. Just be a little ugly and kludgy and put this up here, and let's use our electrons. Let's inconvenience some electrons instead of tearing down more trees. We've got the tech for now. Let's use it. And so I always love to put this up, and I want you all to just sit with this for a minute. Isn't she beautiful? And there's only one of them. There's only one of them in the whole universe. There's only one. And we are the most intelligent beings existing on this one island in space. And it's up to us. We are responsible for where we're at today and where we can possibly be in the future. I want to show you what a corporate culture, rather than a loving, peaceful culture, looks like right now. And I want to share with you some information from Chris Hodges today. He says, we can cut our consumption of fossil fuels, we can use less water, we can banish plastic like I'm asking you to do today, we can install compact fluorescent light bulbs, we can compost in our backyard, but unless we dismantle the corporate state, all those actions will be just as ineffective as the ghost dance shirts donned by First Nations warriors to protect themselves from the bullets of white soldiers at Wounded Knee. For the oil and natural gas industry, the coal industry, the arms and weapons manufacturers, industrial farms, deforestation industries, the automotive industry, and chemical plants will not willingly accept their own extinction. Corporations will continue and must continue by the very nature of the system, to cannibalize the planet for the sake of money. And we collude in this with every choice we make, every day in what we choose to buy, or our transportation choices, and our own blind chasing of the dollar. Let me give you a few relevant statistics about that, just so you can understand the comparative analysis, because there's a whole lot going on in the world right now where people are like, okay, I'm going to compost, I'm going to save this, I'm going to do that. Let me give you a little bit of numbers about how effective those beautiful and important gestures are going to be. The damage done to the environment by human households is minuscule compared to the damage done by corporations. Municipalities and individuals use 10% of the nation's water, while the other 90% is consumed by agriculture and industry. Individual consumption of energy accounts for about a quarter of all the energy consumed. The other 75% is consumed by corporations. Municipal waste accounts for only 3% of the total waste production in the United States. We can and should live more simply, but it will not be enough if we do not radically transform the economic structure of the industrial world. We heard also about peak oil, peak everything, and also the status of resource availability on the planet, and just from Dr. Reese. And my great friend Rex Weiler has allowed me to use this slide, and I'm going to put up a set of things that we must do right now. And I know it's going to feel impossible. Many of you might say, oh, geez, maybe we have to do that, but there's no way we can. But Mike Harcourt told us today that we can, and he proved it. We don't have an 8-lane highway along our coast anymore. We can do this. And these are targets, and these are requests, and these, well, they're not requests, they're facts. We've done the math. This isn't politics. I'm politically agnostic. I'm a physicist. It's all about the numbers for me. You know, and quite frankly, I always tell people, if this is really not true, somebody has a moral responsibility to tell me and relieve my suffering and that of everybody else. I mean, come on. I'm not attached to being a political warrior around environmental issues. I just want to survive, you know, and I want my kids to survive, and I want to be a grandma. And I know for a fact that our corporate structure and our collusion as a corporate culture is the sole thing that is destroying where we live. Are you ready? This is nail-biting, okay? When he sent them to me, I was like, there's no way. But the math says this is what we have to do. We have to eliminate cars and build public transport. And let me give you a fine example of that here right in Canada. We recently had a federal gift of $10,000 to make electric cars. Our resource limitations are so great right now that that is frightening to me. That money should have gone into solar-powered electric public rail transport. Full stop. No more cars. Thank you. Just stop it. Convert car spaces to food production and build soils. Building soil spiritually is man and woman's greatest responsibility on the planet. I want you to hold that too. That's all we're supposed to be doing here. We need to stabilize and reduce the human population. And that's going to come through women's rights and contraception. I'm not going to get into the issues of abortion and all those sorts of things, but I am going to get into the issue of empowering women, first and foremost, for the right to their decisions about their own bodies and to their right to live in a safe world that isn't violent against them with rape and pillage, and that we are recognized again as the life givers on this planet. I want you guys to think about that for a minute. Women give life. And we won't take advantage of your respect of us. I promise. And we deserve that respect. The feminine, everyone says, oh, we got to rise up. The women have to be there. Stop beating us up. Let us get up off our knees. Let us breathe and listen to us. And let us have rights for our own bodies. We need to reduce CO2 emissions by 80% immediately. It's interesting to see these new numbers that are bouncing around. I worked at Shell International. I was an advisor to the Senior Committee of Managing Directors on the issues of climate change and sustainability. And we were doing our initial research, and this was 10, 11 years ago. And at that time, in our modeling with MIT, before we had this new information from the International Panel on Climate Change, that things are happening 20 years faster than we anticipated, we said then, inside the industry, that we damn well better not go over 320. And I kind of come down off the mountain after being out of the corporate world for 10 years, and come down, and I'm just kind of scratching my head, and I'm thinking, how come the baseline's 2005 now? What happened in 1990? You know, what the heck? What happened to all those emissions? And let me tell you something. They also know how to achieve that, and they still get to make a lot of money. Promise, cross my heart, hope to die, stick a needle in my eye. I've done it. I've seen it. I've done the technology work at refineries all over the world. And reducing the carbon footprint of the refining capacity of Shell International worldwide can be done with a capital investment ratio that results in an 83% return in 2.2 years. So take that, profit boys. That's going to get you there. And in addition to that, it also drives innovation and reduces it makes the money. They don't need to drill for more oil. They just need to make their current operations more efficient. It's a $60 billion opportunity annually alone for them. So when they cry and scream and yell at the political, over the political debates and tell you that it's going to destroy the economy, you're all going to go broke, it's going to be worse than ever before, tell them that's a lie. And don't let them bully you, because it's not true. And they can do it, and they can do it in next year's capital allocation budget. And we need to demand that from them, because we are the corporate culture. So let's change our culture. We need to reduce the throughput of matter and energy in everything that we design. If we simply used energy return on energy invested as a screen for every capital investment, be it a repair of a road, a decision about whether to put in rail or build more highways, the answers would be very clear to us, and we would decarbonize this economy in the time frames necessary for our survival. And it's simple. It's like I don't have to write an 800-page manual to tell you how to calculate triple bottom line and all that sort of stuff. Just add energy return on energy invested into the current ROI calculations. Real simple. There's our silver bullet. We need to do 100% recycling of all materials, energy, and soil from organic waste. Full stop. Ecological building codes, heat pumps, insulate. Brilliant ideas here around that. We need to preserve all farmland and all forests and plant trees. This is critical to our survival. We need to preserve wilderness, diversity, symbiosis. We've got very little left. We're burning through it like crazy right now. And we need to reduce meat consumption. That's kind of hard for me. I get it. I'm an omnivore. I grew up with that. I like a good steak every once in a while. Believe me. But we got to do it. All right? That's another thing. Just stop this. We need to prepare for dikes. One of the things that I'm really asking urban locations in coastal areas is to really embrace the fact that you are facing large-scale relocation of your populations in the next 5 to 10 years. Large scale. And if there's any more important planning discussion that needs to go on urgently, is how we're going to manage the relocation of massive amounts of climate change refugees from the coastal communities to the inner portions of our continents. This is very real. Trust me, the planning process, 10 years, we'll be lucky if we can get it done in 10 years. It's a very laborious bureaucratic process. We need global education and literacy building. We need to localize. I can't embrace this enough. We need to localize and build resilient communities. The national and international political process and system cannot move fast enough and nimbly enough to deliver on the agenda and the systems conditions that are rapidly bearing down upon us. This has to be resolved at the local level. Vancouver needs to set a CO2 limit that's enforceable in its own city that gets us to 80%. We need to do it at the municipal and the county and the provincial level. It will not happen fast enough in those other architectures. Not because people don't have the will, but because the process itself, the bureaucratic process itself, is inhibiting. To get a regulation passed and have due process and to have public opinion and put everybody's input takes anywhere from 5 to 7 years. We don't have that kind of time. And more importantly, we're going to have to open to each other and take care of each other deeply and passionately. I'm going to move now into something that I think is important and the only way that we're going to change corporate culture. And I'll start with Martin Luther King. I adore him. And he says, our scientific power has outrun our spiritual power. We have guided missiles and misguided men and women. Our hope for creative living lies in our ability to reestablish the spiritual needs of our lives in personal character and social justice. Without this spiritual and moral reawakening, we shall destroy ourselves in the misuse of our own instruments. And so, how do we change our corporate culture? How do we do that? How do we address this? I believe fully that it is a function of learning to forgive ourselves and learning to forgive others. And that forgiveness at a deep, deep level for what we have done is critical to our survival. I'm going to read you a story about forgiveness to inspire you. There was an elderly black woman brought by the Truth and Reconciliation Commission face to face with the man, Mr. Vandenbroek, who had confessed to the savage torture and murder of both the woman's son and her husband a few years earlier. Sorry, this one always breaks me up. The old woman had been made to witness her husband's death. The last words of her husband had been, Father, forgive them. One of the members of the commission turned to her and asked, how do you believe justice should be done to this man who has inflicted such suffering on you, so brutally destroyed your family? The old woman replied, I want three things. I want to first be taken to the place where my husband's body was burned so that I can gather up the dust and give his remains a decent burial. She stopped, collected herself, and then went on. My husband and son were my only family. I want secondly, therefore, for Mr. Vandenbroek to become my son I would like for him to come twice a month to the ghetto and spend a day with me so that I can pour out to him whatever love I have still remaining within me. And finally, I want a third thing. I would like Mr. Vanderbroek to know that I offer him my forgiveness because Jesus Christ died to forgive. This was also the wish of my husband. And so I would kindly ask someone to come to my side and lead me across the courtroom so that I can take Mr. Vanderbroek in my arms, embrace him, and let him know that he is truly forgiven. The assistants came to help the old black woman across the room. Mr. Vanderbroek, overwhelmed by what he had heard, fainted. And as he did, those in the courtroom, friends, family, neighbors, all victims of decades of oppression and injustice, began to sing Amazing Grace. How sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. You can hear this story and be deeply moved by it, but still think that it is its relevance to the gritty problems of world affairs and the collapse of our ecosystems and the earth is marginal. This is a mistake. Anyone who has been involved with the Palestinian-Israeli and the Indian-Pakistan conflicts, the two most dangerous conflicts in our world, must know by now that any purely political solution, a changing of boundaries, or the exchange of money or power has only a very small chance of working. In such extreme situations, extreme situations characterize increasingly all realms of our world, only extreme solutions born from another dimension of truth and compassion have any real chance of being effective. There will be no end to the potential horror of more fish stocks disappearing, polar bears going extinct, and human beings starving to death every day, until a great many people on both sides have made the amazing and humbling journey of the elderly black woman to unconditional forgiveness. Not from a position of weakness or defeat, but from a mysterious inner experience of the nature of God as being one with all, embracing mercy. While dauntingly difficult, such a journey is by no means impossible. Countless numbers of anonymous and so-called ordinary beings have made it throughout history and are making it now. Such a height of unconditional forgiveness and embrace is also essential to the success of all major activism adventures in our world. Savage denunciation of corrupt corporations and lazy politicians and of a media in bed with systems of cold evil that want to keep exploiting the earth may have truth in its fury, but it has two main disadvantages in practical affairs. The excitement of projecting onto others our own unacknowledged darkness blinds us from seeing just how implicated we are and ensures that the advocacy of our case increases rather than heals resistance. Human beings are never going to be convinced to change their ways by other human beings who try to humiliate them through self-righteous contempt. In almost every case, such condemnation only reinforces the behavior it is trying to end. When someone is accused of something they know they are guilty of, by someone who they can see has contempt for them, they nearly always retreat even further into their self-destructive behavior. Or if they do change, it is from fear or even hypocrisy and not from their own truth. I'll close with two things. One, I'm inviting you to claim your sovereignty from the corporate culture. Reclaim your community. And in your community, fearlessly, urgently, transform where you live, your neighborhood, into a sovereign, vibrant, sustainable state of love and peace that is not codependent on the corporate state. Thank you.
You have just heard a keynote presentation from the 2009 Gaining Ground Summit in Vancouver, British Columbia, held October 20th to 22nd. The meeting theme was Resilient Cities, Urban Strategies for Transition Times. That was Anita Burke, formerly a top advisor to Shell Oil internationally on shifting corporate culture. This recording is by Alex Smith of Radio EcoShock. Find this and other speeches as free MP3 downloads in the Cities section of our audio on demand menu at ecoshock.org. For more information and video of the Resilient Cities Conference, go to www.gaininggroundsummit.com.